So it's right around this time each and every year that everybody starts really digging into their goal setting. For some of you, it's going to be a little later. You guys, you know, maybe wait till like late December when things slow down or whatever. But with that, you're going to start to see a lot of content being put out there that, quite frankly, a lot of it sounds the same. I mean, do we really need to read another blog post on like smart goal setting? And you're going to like bump into a lot of like really motivational rah-rah types of pieces. So today I thought it might be interesting for us to attack goal setting from two perspectives that nobody ever talks about. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 20,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about goal setting from the like two different perspectives that like nobody ever touches upon. Like I was saying before in the intro, you have lots of things out there using that SMART acronym. And you have lots of things that are very motivational and make you feel good. And it's going to be the best year ever. Get out there and get after it. But I thought today, like let's go after this from a perspective, like two different perspectives that nobody ever like thinks to warn us about and tell us about and get us prepared so that we can really kick ass in the new year. So you guys know how I like to roll. We're going to get right down to business. So the first of the two is a little bit of a repeat from last week's podcast. If you listened to my podcast last week on, what would that be? Like November 18th-ish? You'd know that one of the things I talked about was the following. So if you're in a place where you can safely jot this down, please do so because I feel it's very important. Getting started at the right time. Getting started at the right time. Everybody and their mother, I've literally seen people bring their mother and say, hey, mom, like do this. Everybody waits until January 1st to get started on their goals. And I like, and by the way, I don't want to seem like some pompous ass that thinks he knows it all and everything else. I was one of them for like the bulk of my adult life. But why are we waiting until January 1st? I mean, I get it. It's the new year. It's a clean slate. But here it is right now. It's November 25th. And that gives us like approximately like what? Like 37 days or something like that to get a jump start on the world who are going to be waiting until January the 1st. Now, before I dive a little bit deeper into this, you know, this one really hits home for me. On many levels about getting started now. I want to be clear about something. I'm not saying that this is an invitation for you to be irresponsible. So if you are looking to start a business next year, I'm not saying go quit your job like right now and jump in. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is if like one of your goals is to start a business next year in 2019, like why are we waiting until 2019 to start doing some of the prep work and educating yourself on running a business or identifying the areas where you could use some polish as a future business owner and start working on those today? Like, I mean, like why would you wait until then? Like why not now? So like I had mentioned, this hits home for me. And I said it hits home on many levels. So I'm not going to share every single story about this particular one, but I just hit a major milestone for me and my blogging efforts and everything else. It was exactly 10 years ago yesterday on November 24th that I got sick and tired of putting things off in my life, and I wrote my very first blog post. And I'm going to tell you, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I really didn't. I mean, even just in terms of, you know, not that I'm any kind of a brilliant writer. You guys that follow me, you know that I butcher the hell out of the English language. And, you know, those people who are grammatical Gestapo, you guys would have a field day with my blog post. But I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. Like, even like what I was writing, I was like, look, I got to start. And I'll never forget the very first blog post that I wrote 10 years ago on Thanksgiving weekend. And it was called Differentiate or Die. And we've all heard that term before. And I was really talking about the importance of us kind of standing out in a Me Too world. And, you know, it's very relevant even today. But I didn't know what I was doing with it. I mean, I barely knew how to post it. I didn't know how to, like, get people to subscribe to it. I didn't know how to promote it. I didn't know where to go to promote it. I didn't even have, like, a running list of topics. But I found that because I didn't know those things. It was becoming my convenient excuse. And then finally I said, like my life is waiting here. Why wouldn't I just do this and then learn? Like, what's the downside? I mean, am I going to, like, really offend somebody because I don't know how to properly post my blog post or the right platform or, you know, a few spelling errors or whatever it is? I mean, screw it, man. Like, I'm going to jump in. I'm going to, like, learn how to do this. And what I did back then was I was just posting, like, once a week just to kind of learn about it. And at the same time, I was, you know, by day, a vice president for a $1 billion-a-year printing company. So it really does hit home with me because I think we tend to put things off. I mean, like, I can imagine, like, my fear back then was that if I kept putting it off, and by the way, I had put it off at that point in November. It was probably 2 to 3 months at that point that I had already put it off. But my fear was if I don't do it, I might never do it because there's always other things that were going on and everything else. And it was really, like, the best decision I've ever made because at the point in time when I started blogging, I had no intention of doing it as, like my bread and butter. I was doing it because I wanted to build a safety net for someday. And back then, I was really interested in writing a book. It's really not something I'm as passionate about. If the day comes when I'm passionate about it, I will dive into that one. But, you know, my thing is I don't really like going after things that I'm not 100% passionate about. But back then, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to write a book. So I needed to build my army. So I figured, okay, I'm not going to be writing the book like today or tomorrow in the next year or two. So why not start now anyway and start building my army long before I need them? And that's what I did. Had a little bit of a change of events in 2010 and made me really step back and look at my life and look at the fact that once again, I was putting something off, which was the dream of, like, owning a business again someday. And I decided then to, like, embrace this army that I had started building 2.5 years earlier in 2008 and make a go of it. But now let's bring this back to you. So this whole idea of waiting to January 1st, I think, is not the best one in the world. I mean, I think there are things that you could be doing today, depending on the goal. And the other thing that I just want to throw at you is that, you know, there's all different reports on this, but I'm sure you've heard this. It takes about 30 days for something to become a habit. So think about this. If you start now, you'll have new habits that are just, I mean, they're just cemented in on January the 1st instead of beginning that whole process. So if you really want to crush your goals in 2019, you really want to start today. So one of the ways that you can start today, we talked about this last week, is taking an honest inventory of the skills that you're going to need. I don't care how long you've been in sales. By the way, for those of you who don't know me, I've been in sales right now. It's been 35 years. And I can honestly tell you that I still consider myself a humble student. You don't want to be around me on a week that I didn't have a chance to, like, dedicate several hours to learning. I mean, I'm up early, I'm reading things, I'm listening to podcasts. I have two coaches at this point of my life when I could easily justify and say, hey, look, man, I've trained 20,000 sales reps. I mean, what's a coach going to do for me? Or what are these books going to do for me or whatever? But I'm always learning something. So you know, the first thing you're going to want to do is take a look at your skills. Now, one thing I've been giving away on my podcast forever, and I really want you guys to take advantage of it, is this checklist that I put together where we put together, I think it's about 80 or 75 qualities of sales rock stars. Next to each quality is a little like you see numbers from 1 to 10, where you could rate yourself next to that quality. Like how do you think you are on negotiation or time management or on rapport building or questioning skills or whatever? And you can rate yourself. And I want you to start by going to yoursalesplaybook.com/checklist. yoursalesplaybook.com/checklist. Download it. Rate yourself on a scale from 1 to 10. I want you to identify your top three qualities and your crappiest three qualities. And the question always comes up, Castain, why aren't we just focusing on where we need to like get better? I think that's a major flaw in self-improvement. Why are we just focusing on areas that have to get like where we suck? I mean, by all means, let's focus on that. But if there's an area where you're like an 8 or a 9, let's start talking about how we can get those like 8s and 9s to like damn near a 10 plus or off the charts or whatever. Let's move it from good to not only great, but like awesome, all caps, awesome, by the way. So what you want to do now is once you identify those skills, get to work now while the rest of the world is focusing on closing business. Now, let's talk about that very, very quickly. Of course, you should be focusing on closing business when it's year end. Your boss, everyone's boss would like run me out of town if I told you otherwise. But I'm telling you, I think there's like way too much of a focus on closing this time of year. We can go off on this one in an entire podcast, by the way. My reservations with this range from looking desperate to giving away the store. But more importantly, when you're doing nothing but focusing on closing, what happens January 1st when like you've dried up the vast majority of your opportunities? I mean, so while the rest of the world is putting all their artillery fire on closing, I want you to start like working on some of these skills that you've identified, but also start sprinkle in some equal helpings of hunting for new opportunities. That's how you jumpstart 2019 by 37 days, by the way. Most people, they're going to be like right now, you probably have done it yourself. Yeah, next year, I'm going to prospect more. I'm going to get out there and knock on more doors. Some of these creative things I hear Castain talking about and some of these emails. Like what's so magical about January the 1st? Like why the hell don't you do it now? I mean, you're going to lose 37 days? Like, where does that make sense? Show me that one. Like, where that makes sense to do that? Well, it's because I'm closing shit. Well, then maybe like you need to like refocus and stop putting everything on closing shit. So that's one of the things that I want you to think about. The next thing, and this brings us to item number two. So item number one is really getting started at the right time. My definition of the right time is like get going now. Get going now. Like work on some of those skills. The second thing is, and this one is a huge thing. This one, if ever you were to write something down, pull over the car first and do it. This is the one. You need to circle this one. You need to like, if you had the technology to animate your handwriting so it like little arrows were like flying into the saying, over here, dude, and like exploding off the page in like Grouchy fireworks fashion, it's this one. You need to know the obstacles that get in the way of attaining your goal. I have a few that I want you to think about. Problem is that most people, they wait on their goal setting, let alone getting started. A lot of people wait until it's like right there at year end, and there is just so much piss and vinegar in there. And I think that's an awesome thing, by the way, to have piss and vinegar and enthusiasm. It is so important. But it's a Red Bull adrenaline rush at best. You conk out. And we really need to be thinking about the things that will keep us from like hitting the goal. So I want to share a very quick statistic with you, and then we'll dig into like identifying what these obstacles are so that, and I'll even give you some things to embrace so that you're aware of when these obstacles pop up and show you what you can do about it. But according to U.S. News, by the second week in February, every single year, 80% of those who've set New Year's resolutions have fallen off the bandwagon and given up. I think that's worth repeating. According to U.S. News, by the second week in February, each and every year, 80% of those who have set New Year's resolutions have fallen off the bandwagon and given up. I think that sucks. I really do. And I will tell you, I don't know if you guys are like me, and maybe a little painfully honest with yourself at times. I'm sitting here and I'm like, yeah, man, that's about right. I've done that. I've done that with weight loss. I've done this with some financial goals. I've done this with spiritual goals. I've done every area of my life. I can tell you that's been me falling off by February. And in many cases, I think second week in February is being really, really generous. I think this happens by the third week in January. I mean, I really do. I think right about that third week in January, it's pretty much done. So let's talk about some of the obstacles that get in the way of attaining your goal. And I'm just going to throw these at you. There's more than these, but I'm going to throw these at you for now and then offer a few ideas. So I'm putting the first two in kind of the same bucket, and it's excuses and procrastination. Excuses and procrastination, fear, negativity, and negative people. And then we'll put one more in there for now. Again, we could argue that there's many more than this, but let's just focus on a handful. And then the last one is managing your time. So let's run through them one more time, and then I'm going to go through them and throw a few ideas to get you going in the right direction. So we've got excuses and procrastination. We have fear. We have negativity and negative people and managing your time. So what I want you to do when it comes to these things, and hopefully you've pulled the car over, you've jotted these down. If maybe you didn't get a chance, hopefully you're pulling over now. I think these are worth jotting down because it can make a really significant difference in your year if you can get a handle on these things. The first thing that I want you to do is carve out some thinking time. Have you ever found yourself saying, man, I'm so busy, I don't even have time to think? I think that is the major flaw in most of our plans, most of the day-to-day that we have. We just don't take the time to think things through. So one of the things I've been doing now for about 8 years is carving out time every single day to think through different things in my business, in my life, different accounts that I'm trying to go after, even my performance in different appointments that I've had that day, that week, and even kind of having some time to think through things that are challenging me personally. So carve out some thinking time and think through each and every one of these areas and some of the ideas that I'm about to give you. So let's take procrastination. One of the things I want you to think about when it comes to procrastination are, like, what are the avoidance activities that you typically embrace? An avoidance activity, it's pretty much like it says. It's something that you do to avoid doing something else. So let me give you a great example. Many times we avoid prospecting. Why? Because, you know, well, I'm not going to just like get, well, in fact, I'm going to get into the why in a minute because it's actually a very, very important why, and I'm going to share a study with you. But we avoid like cold calling and making calls or whatever it is. And the way that we do it is like we'll be at, for some people, like we'll spend more time in the plant. Now, we're not doing this consciously. We're not saying, I want to spend more time in the plant because I don't want to pick up the phone. Or maybe what we're doing is we're spending more time calling clients instead of calling potential clients. Maybe we're spending more time chit-chatting with coworkers or doing administrative things. That's like a big avoidance activity because we really deep down, it's a much safer activity than it is risking getting like our ass handed to us on the phone. So I want to share a study that I used to share all the time, and then I said, okay, everybody's tired of hearing me say this. Let me take a break for like a year or so. But there was this study that was done on procrastination, and you're going to hear a really bad joke from me in a minute, but it's not my fault. It's this guy's fault for doing this. He did. This guy, Dr. Piers Steele, up at the University of Calgary, I believe it was, he did a 10-year study on procrastination. Now, come on. I mean, like, think about that. I mean, is he not setting himself up like to get laughed out of every effing bar like in the world? A 10-year study in procrastination. You know what the joke's going to be. Like, what, you put it off 9.5 years, dude? What the hell? 10 years for a procrastination study? Probably because you were procrastinating. Like, get your own shit together. But anyway, no, seriously, it was like a 10-year study. And what they found was at like the heart and the core of procrastination. You ready for this? It's fear, right? I mean, it's fear. It's like a fear and a disbelief that we could do it. And so in many cases, when it comes to like avoiding the phone or whatever, or maybe it's avoiding having difficult conversations, or maybe it's avoiding asking the difficult questions when you meet with potential clients. I mean, you know, we all have these different things that we avoid. So the thing I want you to think about is, okay, what are the things that are like scaring me that I tend to avoid, and why? And what is that based on? Because sometimes, like, this might be based on something that happened to you like way back when, and it's just unfounded now. It's no longer relevant. I mean, you know, I mean, if I based like a fear of the phone on my first cold call, I would never cold call again. I mean, I remember that call. And thank God it was in the days when they didn't have caller ID. And I remember I called up and somebody like asked me this question. I mean, I just wasn't prepared for it. And I'll never forget the question. They said, well, what are you calling down a list? And like, I was just like, I was dumbfounded. I didn't know what the hell to say to that. So I hung up on myself. Like today, like I if somebody said that to me, like, you know, what are you calling down a list? I would be like, you know, who effing cares what I'm calling from? You know, what do you give a shit what I'm calling from? I wouldn't say that. But I would be thinking that in my mind, like who gives a shit? Like what prompted me to call you? I mean, is that going to make a difference? Is that going to suddenly make you need sales training? Oh, yeah, you got it from, like, a list that you bought? You know, who cares? He was doing it to be a dick and to, like, ruffle my feathers, so to speak, if I had feathers. I probably did have feathers, and I had hair, and I probably had feathers. I don't know. What the hell? But sometimes it's based on stuff. So I want you to think about the things that scare you, but, like, more importantly, like, the things that you should be doing that you tend to avoid, what are those, like, avoidance activities look like? I'll give you one final example outside of sales and business that I've, like, shared here before. My wife, like, always says to me, that she always knows when I'm avoiding something around the house, or even sometimes in business, but mostly around the house. And I said, "How do you know?" She says, "Because I see you out there watering the lawn," and that's like my like household avoidance thing. It's like it's just a mindless, brainless activity for me to do. And meanwhile, I'm pretty sure that there's something called like the invention of the sprinkler and sprinkler systems and stuff. And I'm out there manually watering the effing lawn. It's because, you know what? I'd rather water the lawn than weed out the garden or do any of these other things on the honey-do list that like she has like given me in like triplicate. So you have to identify yours too. So the next thing that is closely related to procrastination is this whole concept of fear. Because remember we said at the core of procrastination, according to that 10-year study that Dr. Piers Steele procrastinated 9.5 years of, by the way, I'm kidding, that fear is at the center of it. So what I want you to do when it comes to fear is I want you to, again, what are you afraid of? What is it based on? But here's what you need to do, and this will tie back into procrastination and all these other things that we're going to be talking about. What, like, how are you going to interrupt that pattern? So let's kind of go back for a minute. Let's go back to that procrastination thing. When you know what procrastination looks like for you, like, let's just say I'm out there watering the lawn, right? And meanwhile, it's January, and geez, Paul, it's 3 degrees outside, and yeah, it's kind of a foot and a half of snow, and you live in New York. You might be avoiding something. You need something to interrupt your pattern. So maybe in your case, it's avoiding, like, making a phone call. What do you do? What do you do when you avoid making phone calls? Maybe it's making more calls to your clients. Maybe it's doing administrative things. Maybe it's there's a technical term. I believe it's called dicking around in, like the plant, right? Like, you're out in the plant and you're like the technical term is dicking around. You're out there. What are you going to do? So, like, one of the things I do when I catch myself procrastinating, I don't say it out loud, even though I work by myself. What I do is I kind of just say to myself, like, it's an old Zig Ziglar thing. I say to myself, the rule is simple. You do it now. The rule is simple. You do it now. So, you know, that's one of the things that I might do. I might even get very competitive with myself. And I might say, okay, Castain, is this going to get you to your goal? Is this going to make you the money you want to make in 2019 by sitting here and, like, watering the lawn in January and freezing and, like, catching cold and all kinds of dopey shit because you don't want to make a call? You know, big tough guy, 53 years old, shaved head, goatee, brother was a Navy SEAL, taught you how to fight, beat the shit out of your bully, and now you're going to let this bully you again? No, man. Hell no. So anyway, so you need to find your pattern interrupt for when you're putting off doing that. Same thing with fear. Like, how are you going to interrupt that when you find yourself fearful of something? I mean, I think there's good fear that can serve us. I think there's bad fear. In fact, Tony Robbins used to say when it came to fear, make sure that fear is a counselor and not a jailer. Make sure it is a counselor to you and not a jailer. Quick story. And I'm sure I've mentioned this one before, but many years ago, my kids used to go for martial arts. And it was Kenpo, by the way. And I was speaking with, I think they call him a Sheehan or whatever it is. I used to think of, like, Charlie Sheehan, but I didn't want to say that to the guy because I'm pretty sure with 7 degrees to his black belt, he might beat the shit out of me for saying that. But, you know, I wanted to ask him if that was his name, by the way. Is your first name Charlie Sheehan? But anyway, Sheehan. He competed in a lot of MMA types of tournaments down in Atlantic City and everything. And really, just a really nice guy. And I remember just kind of shooting the breeze with him one day and having this nice conversation. He was talking about competing and all that. And I said to him, I got to ask you a question. You know, you had told me in another conversation that you've been a martial artist now for 30-something years. You've obviously advanced to a very high level. You have multiple schools, a franchise, everything else. You know, do you still get scared when you go in the ring, man? I see the beating some of these people get. And I'll never forget what he said to me. He said, and I shouldn't be laughing at this. I'm just an idiot. But he said, I don't necessarily get afraid, but I'm very respectful of the situation. And I said to him, hey, Sheehan, hey, Charlie Sheehan, you know, I mean, is that just like French for, like, you know, you still shit your pants when you get the ring? Like, I did say something inappropriate like that. And he goes, no, Paul, dead serious, man. He goes, there's a very big difference between being fearful of something and being respectful of something. When we are fearful of something, it's very simple, it's similar to that counselor or jailer Tony Robbins thing that I was sharing before. When we let fear get the best of us, it paralyzes us. It forces us in many cases not to make an attempt because it's safer not to, and we submit and we tap out. He goes, but I'm respectful instead. I'm respectful of the fact that I could seriously hurt that person that I'm about to fight. I'm also respectful of the fact that they could seriously hurt me. When I'm respectful of the situation, I do what I have to do to make sure I get the result that I want with the least amount of, you know, difficulty or, you know, pain or whatever it is for me and the other person. And I thought that was a very good perspective to have. The next thing is, and I think it's a huge one, is negativity and negative people. And I want you to think about that. I want you to think about that. Like, what things, what scenarios, what people kind of are the catalyst for your negativity? And I want you to identify them and maybe think about, like, some kind of a pattern interrupt. There was someone that I studied as part of a best practices study in the printing industry. And I'll never forget, he had said to me that, because I asked him the question, because like part of the criteria we used for the study is that we didn't want somebody who was just having a good year and then, you know, maybe it's luck or whatever. We wanted consistent performance, especially people who have performed in bad economies, who had been with us a few years, and also people who have progressed, like, you know, incrementally grown their business. So this one guy I was talking with, and he had such like a positive outlook about business and life and his coworkers, a very helpful attitude. And I said, okay, I have to ask the question, were you always this way? And he said, brilliant question. Which usually people say when they don't want to answer your question. You ever notice that? But he actually like wasn't blowing smoke up my ass to like, you know, like just to like run out of the room and not answer the question. He said, actually, I was the most negative person on the planet. And he said something very interesting about negativity that I had never thought about. He goes, at times negativity is enjoyable. He goes, don't let anybody tell you different. He goes, sometimes it's great sitting there and pissing and moaning about all the changes in the sales department and the company and the clients who suck and the people who promised you this and how you've been screwed at that and everything else. And he said, for him, what was happening was that it started with a few comments here and there, but then it started consuming him. Not only like his thoughts after the discussions, but there would be a group of them that would go out to lunch, and they went out regularly. And what happened was these lunches would go longer and longer and longer. In some cases, they would be an hour and a half, almost 2 hours long, where everybody's spewing all kinds of negativity. And then he realized that afterwards, he couldn't work. He would be going home. He, like, after, like, just sitting there and being miserable about life, do you really feel like you have the body armor to get on the phone and cold call or, like, face rejection or to get out there? You're not feeling very motivated, and you're not feeling really good about yourself and life and your circumstances and your company and your customers. So he realized that something had to change for him. And maybe something has to change for you right there. And by the way, if that story doesn't do it, then let me tell you, there was a study that was done by an organization called DDI, and they found that the average person spends 15 hours a month complaining about their boss. Now, 15 hours, according to DDI, a study that they did, the average person spends 15 hours a month complaining about their boss. Now, I think you could easily, like, if you're sitting here saying, well, you know, I own my own business like you, Paul, like, what am I complaining about myself? Or, no, my boss and I, we're like peas and carrots, like Forrest Gump would say. But how about this? Maybe you're not complaining about your boss, but could negativity and negative people that you're around be consuming or taking up 15 hours of your month? Well, what if, like, that's way off and it's half of that? What if you could liberate back those 7 hours and put it towards something productive next year, and you were to get back 7 hours a month? I mean, think about that. That would be 84 hours a year. And quite frankly, it would be like somebody handing you a bonus check at the end of the year for what, like 2 weeks or something like that? That's not too shabby. I don't know about you. I wouldn't like hand back a bonus check and say, hey, man, you obviously need the money more than me, cheap bastard. No, man, I'd take that. I'd run the hell out of there before they realize what they had done. Get that money in the bank. I'd probably throw it in an offshore account so my wife didn't see it. I'd go and finance my cigar habit that is easily getting into six figures a year. No, but it's bad. So that's one of the things that you can do. But how about like managing your time? I mean, when I worked for Dale Carnegie, I took this leadership course there. And I took full advantage, by the way, when I worked for Dale Carnegie, the fact that I could take all the courses for free and just like better myself, like for the low, low cost, the free. And I took this leadership course. I knew all the instructors because part of my responsibility was overseeing 150 instructors in the New York area. And I went in there, and when the instructor got to the point about tracking your time, I gave her a really heartfelt eye roll. I mean, seriously, like everybody always says I have a bad poker face. I was a lot worse back then, and I'm sure it was bad. I could just tell by the look on her face. And she comes over to me on the break, and she says, hey, smartass, I noticed that, like, you got a little, like, uncomfortable and, like, you know, kind of like a little sarcastic when I was saying everybody should track their time for a week. So your assignment is going to be you have to do double what everybody else does because you work for the company and you've got to be able to practice what you preach. I want you to track your time for 2 weeks. And I said, well, I already know where I'm losing time. She goes, yep, humor me. But, you know, if you want a passing grade in the course, you're going to do the assignment. So I track my time for 2 weeks, and now every time I track my time, ever since then, back, and that was like 2005, so for like, what, the last 13 years, I track my time. I get a two-week snapshot of my time whenever I'm doing it. But what I want you to do is track your time, but there's something that you need to track that a lot of people aren't going to tell you to track. I want you to think about, when you're tracking your time, like, pay close attention to time wasters, things that like are just sucking up your time, that are just time wasters. But I also want you to think about interruptions. Interruptions actually is probably going to be bigger than the time wasters. And one of my pet statistics is that study that was done by New York City research firm Basics. And Basics found that the average person loses 2.1 hours a day to interruptions. So if you want to be able to manage your time and take some of that time and liberate it back over to like core money activities. And when I say core money activities, I mean things like new account acquisition. Once you get the account, obviously retaining that account and wowing that account, and finally growing that account. I call that the three drivers of sales success. So getting new business, retaining slash wowing that business, growing that business. So imagine if you're losing 2.1 hours each and every day to interruptions. If you could identify what those are, and in a perfect world, you can make all those go away. I don't know about you, I'm not perfect. I don't know that I can get rid of like all of my interruptions, but I know that I could like put a dent in it. So what if you set a goal for yourself right now, as a result of listening to this podcast, that you are going to identify what your time wasters are, and also your interruptions are. And your goal now, if you're in it about 2 hours a day, is to try to liberate back 30 to 60 minutes of that. And I haven't done the numbers recently, but I believe that would give you like 14 extra selling days in many cases. And like the way that this is going to hit home with you, I want you to look at it right now. We're coming up on year end. How cool would it be if your boss came over to you right now and you're trying to make President's Club, or you're trying to qualify for a bonus or a spiff or something like that? Your boss comes over and goes, listen, everybody, we have another 2 weeks to make it happen. Here we are at year end, man. Like, that would be pretty cool. So that could make a huge impact for you. So that's the second thing, folks. And by the way, there you kind of like have it. I mean, there's a lot more to this, but really the two things I want you to think about in terms of caveats that every sales rep should consider if they want to crush their goals in 2019 is, number one, getting started at the right time. My definition of the right time is like, why wait until January 1st? Why not today? Why not get going on it today? We don't have to go all out on it today, but can't we take the steps? Can't we take the inventory of where we're weak and what we're going to have to start working on? Why not get going on it today? That's number one. Number two, identifying the obstacles that typically get in the way of us hitting our goal and typically put us in that 80% category that's jumped off the bandwagon and have abandoned their resolutions by the second week in February. So, I mean, before you go, I actually have two very quick favors to ask of you. Number one, if you've been enjoying this podcast, could you please pass this along to your boss, your coworkers, maybe like somebody in your LinkedIn network or whatever? That would be very, very helpful. And the final thing is very, very timely. If you haven't done so already, please stop by my Black Friday weekend sale, which is still going on. It's going to be going on until Monday, November 26th at, I believe, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Just to be certain, why don't you figure it's 5 p.m. Eastern time? And there are some really cool discounts on, number one, one-on-one coaching. A coach is a really cool thing to have. Because you remember that thing that we were talking about, how a lot of goals are abandoned? If you have somebody kicking your ass and keeping you on track and you have accountability, it's a little harder to like fall by the wayside. Also, I have discounts on a brand new program that we're going to be launching in January, and it's called Paul Castain's Rockstar Academy. So you'll find an early registration discount for that. Also, there's an early registration discount on an email webinar where we're going to be sharing, you ready for this? I have 50 email templates, and it's called, the whole program is called 70 Ways to Rock Your Cold Emails. It's going to be on December 20th. Also, there's going to be a lot of discounts on my on-demand webinars, and there is a really sweet discount on my Closers Academy download. If you'd like to check it all out, please visit, and do it quickly because it's about to end. Visit yoursalesplaybook.com/Black Friday. yoursalesplaybook.com/Black Friday. And of course, if you have any questions on like any of this, or if I can help you in any way, I want you to reach out to me. Paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. Paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. And speaking of which, I'm Paul from yoursalesplaybook.com, and I'm wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production.